basically 100% in one quadrant. Most of us have a heavy percentage in one quadrant, and then we have more than 50% in one quadrant, and then we might have pieces of the other quadrants. But we typically have a tendency towards one quadrant, and that's what we're really talking about. So I say this person, well, wait a minute, I don't really feel that way, Mary Jo, so I must not be in that quadrant. I'm just going to tell you there are going to be characteristics you have that could overlap into different quadrants. But what you try to do is you know, analyze people and including yourself, and we're going to do that first, on which quadrant we're in so we get a better idea of who we are. The importance of understanding personality quadrants is phenomenal, because I can just tell you, I didn't have any of this background before, you know, I did all my Clemmer work years ago, 7 years ago or something. I hadn't done any personality quadrant analysis work, and very sheltered. Being a lawyer, you know, lawyers always thought they knew it all, so they didn't go to self-development courses or take those kind of things, you know, and I just always can pick on myself in that regard. But the incredible thing is that when I went through this training and education and I started analyzing it, then I started looking at myself. You know, first of all, who am I? Why do I behave the way I behave? And when I found out what my majority quadrant was, I mean, it just opened a world up to me about why I behave the way I behave and the things that I do and the things that I don't do and my likes and my dislikes, my strengths and my weaknesses. It really opened, not that we can't see some of these things independent of doing a personality quadrant analysis, but it gives us a tool to really, you know, kind of, what should I say, we can put it in slots, we can put it in folders, we can you know, really start classifying it so we can get a greater understanding of it and a greater understanding of not just ourselves, which is a big part of it, is just really understanding yourself and where your strengths and weaknesses are and then looking at other quadrants of where you'd like to shift. Hopefully taking on strengths in other quadrants and not, you know, grabbing onto all the weaknesses out there, but how you might want to shift in different quadrants. So it helps you understand yourself. But the other thing that was so crucial in my life, as it will be in yours, and many of you have already done all this kind of work, is understanding you, yourself, in relationship to other people. And that includes me understanding my relationship to my analytical husband. I mean, I would get so frustrated with him on things that he would do, and I would always be trying to make him wrong about things he would do. You know, like I'll give you an example. You won't appreciate this as much once we get into the, you know, analysis if you don't know much about these quadrants. But my husband he's got a heavy percentage in the analytical quadrant, and he's a guy that likes, you know, structure and details and all that stuff. And anyway, I'll never forget when we had Thanksgiving. This is one of my favorite stories about him. I have hundreds because we have 32 rolls of toilet paper, yes, in our closets. And, you know, so some of you can relate to that. You probably are in that in the analytical quadrant. And we never run out of anything in this house. We have 12 rolls of paper towels. And if you go into our pantry, they might topple on your head. But at least, you know, he doesn't ever let it get down to less than two. Otherwise, he goes out and buys 10 more to make sure we don't run out. And we might go through a roll of put paper towel in one a month, you know, maybe, I don't know. But one time at Thanksgiving, I cooked tons of meat and food. I usually have like 25 dishes at Thanksgiving, and I'll never forget, we had all these dishes. It's just one of my big celebration times, that, and Christmas with all the family. And it doesn't even have to be all that many. It could be five of us, and we still have 25 dishes. And I pack it in the refrigerator, and you can imagine what my refrigerator looks like after Thanksgiving. And one day after Thanksgiving, the next day on Friday, I got up and I went downstairs, and I was going through the refrigerator, and I couldn't find the ham. And so I looked at my husband and said, honey, what happened to the ham? He goes, I threw it away. I was like, what? He threw it away. I was like, well, you know, this is after I'd done this personality. At first, you know, 10 years ago, I would have, like, went off the charts. Why did you throw it? It didn't fit. You get this? No. My quadrant could care less whether it fit. We'll pack it in there until it looks like it's falling out. His quadrant, oh my gosh, if it's not perfectly structured and doesn't fit properly, then it needs to be disposed of. It can't be. So I'm just telling you that story so you get how beneficial it is when you're living with somebody that's coming from a different quadrant, so that you can truly coexist and still love this person intimately and wonderfully, no matter what comes out of it, because I can look back and associate his behavior with what quadrant he's coming from. So you know, and that's a beautiful thing in a relationship, whether it's a marriage, whether it's with your children, whether it's with friends, relatives, whatever. And, of course, that also pours into Manatech. You know, what is Manatech all? What is network marketing? Network marketing is a relational business. It's about making friends and making relationships with people and building relationships. So this quadrant analysis is crucial for network marketing because, number one, when you're working with people to sign them up, if you can kind of feel them out and figure out what quadrant they're coming from, you can meet their needs. Instead of you see, we always have to be the, this is where I always tell people, I say, we always want to be the tellers. Well, maybe we need to be walking into their quadrants to meet their needs where they are at. And that's terrible English, but that's where we need to go, where they are. We need to be in their quadrant. We need to relate to them where they're going to be best heard and they're going to best hear you. Because if we come across in a different way, we're losing our opportunity to sign them up. Because they could shut down purely out of your behavior. So I acknowledge that if you can read people, it's just incredible. When people talk slowly and they're very analytical, I can slow down and talk slowly with them and pick up even their mannerisms. I can step into all of that as I work with somebody because, you know, the people who are the analyticals and talk slowly and think things out very thoughtfully, they don't typically like people like Mary Jo if I come from my promoter quadrant because they don't like the fast pace, willy-nilly, doesn't really stick to all the details. They don't like that kind of operation. So if you come from that realm with an analytical, you're going to lose them because they're going to be turned off by your persona. But why can't we shift a little bit? And that doesn't mean you change who you are. It just means you come from a greater understanding of where they are and you meet them where they are. So you meet their needs. So, number one, it would increase your in a gigantic way. Number two, of course, it increases your ability to motivate and empower people because you understand what their likes and dislikes are and what triggers them, what does motivate them. Because people are motivated differently, and you need to know that. I was horrible with one of my first presidentials I broke in Manatech because she was a supporter quadrant, I was a promoter quadrant, and I kept pounding on her to do things. Well, she was never, without me realizing it, she was never going to do the things I was asking her to do because that's not the way she operates. So I could shift and start working with her from a perspective of saying, you know what, we're going to do this project. Now, what part of this project would you feel the happiest to support us in? What would you like, how would you like to, how do you see yourself contributing? And that's, instead of me being okay, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. They might say yes because supporters don't know how to say no, but the problem is they're not happy, and you're making them do things they don't really like to do. So, you know, I had to learn all of that, and it just allowed me to be more effective in working with her and allowing her to be the best she could be in the business as well. So it'll increase your ability to motivate and empower other people because you'll learn how to work with them. And it's just basically about total effectiveness with anyone, whether it's other presidentials or it's other regionals or nationals or any person in your life. Our world is about impacting other people. So why not use tools that are going to, you know, just tremendously support you being more effective in impacting people's lives? And that's what personality quadrant analysis is about. It gives you yet another tool to really support you in supporting people and impacting lives. So the first thing I'd like to do in today's call, for those of you who haven't done this before, for those who have, you can do it again, but there's a mechanism. It's not really as simple as 1, 2, 3, but it really can be if you can answer these questions, accurately. There's a mechanism that I learned that actually kind of helps you learn what quadrant you're in. A lot of you, we sent out quadrant analysis last week in response to the call, so you might already get an idea of which one is your strongest percentage. But what I typically do is I ask people just to take a sheet of paper, if everyone just take a sheet of paper and draw one line down the middle, vertical, right down the middle, vertical, and then cross that line horizontally right in the middle of it. So what you're going to do is you're going to have a big cross on your piece of paper, okay? Everybody do that. All right, and on the top of the piece of paper, I'm going to ask you two questions, and you're going to put your X in one of those four boxes based on your answers to this question. The first question is going to be whether you're at the top, you're going to be in the top two boxes, the bottom two boxes, and here's the question. When you're in an environment with people or the way you dress or the way you operate, typically, do you find yourself being more formal or informal? Typically, do you find yourself being more formal or informal? Now, I know this is very hard for the analyst because I'm that way. And sometimes if you find yourself going through all that kind of stuff, you probably are in the analytical box. You know, because you're finding yourself always having to have to analyze things and really get really perfect in terms of the conclusions that you draw with them. But this is just something to just answer whatever comes to you first in first response is really what you want to do. You want to just look at your first response, and that'll typically be the right one. So do you find yourself more formal or informal? I'm, for instance, more informal. I don't have my hair perfect, my face, my clothes aren't perfect. You know, I could care less. I go to the grocery store and, you know, cut off shorts and a T-shirt and my hair and a little clip on the back, kind of straggly. And, you know, I'm not into that stuff. And I'm not, you know, I sit down at a table and I don't make sure I have perfect posture. I'm not conscious of all those things. That's not who I am. I have a much more informal nature about me. And that doesn't mean I don't dress nicely from time to time. It just means I tend to be much more informal. That's just, to give you an example, that's who Mary Jo is. But you've got to analyze for yourself. Okay, so that's the first question. So now you know whether you're in the top half or the bottom half. So if you're more formal, you're going to be in the top two quadrants. If you're informal, you're going to be in the bottom two quadrants. Okay, everybody got that? So you can even put the word informal at the bottom of your piece of paper and put formal at the top. So now you've got yourself in either top half or bottom half of your piece of paper. And here's your second question that will pinpoint which specific box in the top half or bottom half. When you're working in an environment with people or around groups of people or even, you know, even in a family relationship or whatever else, do you find yourself being more of a flow-with person? In other words, you allow other people to take charge and take control and be dominant, or do you find yourself that take-charge, dominant personality? Which one would you put yourself in? Are you more dominant, or are you more flow-with? Okay, everybody got that? I know we got some analysts going out there again. Your first reaction is going to be your number one reaction. As we go through and analyze where you come out, you may shift your quadrant because you didn't answer these first two questions exactly right, or you were thinking of just one instance in your life instead of your overall life. Let me give you the dominant. So, and you can always do that. This is not about being absolutely perfect in your analysis. You can figure it out as we go through the rest of the analysis. On the left-hand side of your paper is the dominant side. So if you're formal and dominant, okay, and you can write the word dominant on the left-hand side of your paper, the word dominant. If you're formal and dominant, you're going to be in the upper left-hand box. And that upper left-hand box, you write down the word controller. If you're dominant and informal, which is on the lower left-hand box, then you're in the promoter quadrant. So you can write the word promoter in that quadrant. If you're one of the flow-with people, in other words, you tend to flow with more than take control or are dominant in every situation, if you're more flow-with, if you're formal and flow-with, flow-with is on the right-hand side, so you can write the word flow-with on the right-hand side of your paper. If you're formal and flow-with, you'll be in the upper right-hand box, and that's called the analytical. And if you're informal and flow-with, then you're going to be in the lower right-hand box, and that box we call the supporter. Okay? Does anyone want to come off mute and just tell me where you found yourself and have any kind of concept with that? Anyone want to share? I don't want to open it up to everybody because we'll have toilets flushing. Anyone?
Mary Jo?
Yep.
The formal and dominant was controller, is that right?
Yeah, formal and dominant is the upper left-hand corner of the paper. It's called the controller.
And what's the informal and dominant?
Informal dominant is the lower left-hand corner, and we call that the promoter.
Promoter, okay.
The promoter. Okay?
I think that's me.
Yeah, okay.
And okay. The promoter.
We got a lot of those in Manatech, trust me. We also have a tremendous abundance of supporters, too.
And so the controller.
Just to give you an idea, people, if you do this kind of in a classroom setting, if I had 100 of you in a room, typically your largest groups will be in the promoter and the supporter category. Typically, those are where you're going to find your largest groups. But that's not always true. I've done courses in this with people where I've had, you know, 2/3 of the class in the controller group, and boy, was that a heck of a course to teach. So anyway, okay. So now let's talk about the quadrants. Now that you guys have a kind of a beginning concept, just kind of a playful concept of which one you're in, let's talk about what that stands for, okay? Let's
Mary Jo, you're in the supporter, right?
You're so cute. You know, how many people think I'm in the supporter quadrant?
I think you're more than a supporter.
I think, how many people think I fit in the promoter quadrant a little bit?
I think you have all of them.
Yeah, thank you. Or controller always likes to be, you know, likes results, likes the, you know, done. And analytical, who do you go to when you ask about the comp plan? I mean, a minute, or how did you like the incentive in that? You know, they tell me a new incentive, and I've already got it analyzed how many, you know, dollars you're going to earn in each position so you can break it. You know, if that's not analytical, I don't know what is. I can look at three numbers and tell you how to work with them in the best possible way. So, yeah.
But you know how you know how when you did it this way, it so simplifies if you just go by the informal, formal, dominant, with go with the flow. It's easy to see what you are.
Isn't it
personally,
fun? Yeah.
And I'd say you probably started out as pure promoter.
I was real high. I was big promoter, but because in my family we have a lot of math minds, I had a chunk of analytical.
Yes.
So those were my most dominant, highly dominant. I'd probably say 70% was in the promoter, and I was probably 20% analytical, and I was like 9.9% controller and 0.1% supporter. And isn't it cute today that somebody would say, Mary Jo, you're in the supporter quadrant? Isn't that sweet? That's sweet. To me, it's just music to my ears because it really tells you that when you find out what quadrant you're dominant in, you can always start looking at how do I get balance in my life, because you want to have the balance. You don't have to have it. You can stay in your, you know, love what you're doing, who you are, but, you know, to learn balance in your life is really kind of a goal you can set for yourself, because it allows you to really just kind of absorb all. You can kind of be a player in all those markets in a very easy way, because that's part of who you are. Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about our different quadrants now. We're going to run through them, because there's a lot of information you need to know about each quadrant. And one of the analysis that we go through typically when I do this quadrant analysis, I ask people when I look at four quadrants, because it really helps you distinguish the major differences between people that are in these different quadrants and where your you know, percentages. You look at likes, dislikes, attributes, and weaknesses. So you look at those four kind of characteristics of the people. And if you look at I'm going to start with the controller quadrant. The controller quadrant is an interesting quadrant. Those people really like results. They like bottom line. They like target. They like rules. They like structure. They like, you know, they're kind of relentless. They're very time efficient, very competent. They really have an expectation of professionalism. They're decisive and incisive. That's the controller side. Those are their likes. That's their characteristics. Their dislikes are what? Lazy people, lack of production, wasting time, walking on the beach. You know, they're not people that feel real comfortable smelling and planting flowers. That's not their gist, okay? They have a real hard time with those kind of things. They don't like, you know, people who don't really pinpoint and aren't the indecision. A person who's indecisive will drive a controller crazy. They don't like that at all, okay? And then what are their attributes? Well, these people are very, their strengths are, of course, they're very guided, they're very articulate, they're very powerful, they're very strong. What are their weaknesses? Their weaknesses, if you ask the controller what their weaknesses are, their response would probably, they would hem and haw and they'd go, we don't have any. And that's a typical response we get out of this group, that they don't see themselves having any weaknesses. But their weaknesses, that's one of their weaknesses, right there and then. They don't understand the value of being vulnerable with people. That they don't get that vulnerability is an incredibly important characteristic in relationships with other people. So that's one of the. They also their weakness because of that. They have their one of their other weaknesses would be relational. They have they tend to be. It's not that they can't be great spouses, but they tend to be less relational oriented. They're not as concerned. If you walked into the office, the controller, who would typically be what position in the company? He'd be the guy who's running the company, okay? He'd be a senior executive officer. He doesn't want to hear about, you know, your family time you had at the picnic on Sunday. They don't have time for that. They're so directed, so, you know. So that's the controlling. So that's your controller. Controller quadrant. The supporter quadrant, and I'm going to do it supporter next because those quadrants are opposite each other. And the opposite, the diagonal, when you see the diagonals on your piece of paper, controller's diagonal with supporter, those two kind of quadrants are typical in marriages. You typically marry the one that's opposite to you quadrant-wise. If you marry somebody in your own quadrant, a lot of those marriages don't work. You typically, it's kind of like opposites attract. Did you ever hear that that trite phrase? Well, that's typically what happens here. So let's go into the controller. I mean, go from the controller to the supporter. The supporter person, what do we know about supporters? Supporters are people. What are their likes? They like flowers, walks in park. They like good music. They like pets. They like to have friends. They like to be around groups of people. That's their nature. Those are the things that they like. Their dislikes. They dislike strong people who are very decisive and always, you know, numbers oriented and results oriented. Who am I describing? The controller quadrant. Okay. They dislike overbearing people. They absolutely abhor conflict. They'll stay out of conflict. Any opportunity they get, they will flee from conflict. They don't like any of that. And what are their attributes, their strengths? Well, this group of people, your supporters, are typically your most loyal people. They're dependable. They're comfortable. They're supportive. Of course, it doesn't take much to tell you a supporter is supportive. They love teamwork. They work well in teams. They're very great. They're gracious to delegate to. They take on new tasks through delegation very readily. So that's their strengths. Their weaknesses, the number one weakness of a supporter is they have a very hard time using the word no. In other words, they let other people push them around because what's more important to them is that they're liked and that they have a good relationship than expressing themselves. So supporters are people that tend to have more of a, inability to really voice their opinion. And they just think, well, my opinion doesn't matter. It's okay. I can do that for some. Oh, I can. So they tend to sacrifice their lives for others to the point where they don't always end up having the incredibly total fulfilling life that they could have because they've sacrificed themselves for everybody around them. And that's a classic supporter type person. Okay? So learning how to say no, if you wanted to support a supporter, you teach them how to say no. That it's very powerful. It's an incredible exercise for you to do, and they will love you for life over it because they will start regaining some control over their life and their time because they're going to be now empowered to use the word no in their life. So you can see how the controller and supporter are total kind of opposite quadrants. If they both met each other, like in a hallway, the supporter would go up and try to, like, maybe, touch the person because the supporter tends to be a touchy-feely type person, too, because they like people so much. The controller would be cold and kind of like the iceberg and a little bit more removed. They would, like, want their space. If a controller came up to introduce themselves to you, a controller would shake your hand. A supporter would look at that and go, okay, they'll shake your hand because they wouldn't say no to it, but they feel uncomfortable shaking hand because that's such a formal way of, being around somebody. Supporters would rather have an informal hug than they would shaking somebody's hand. But that's how those two react. And it's just an interesting, we can go on and on, and I got so much to cover, I can't get into all the intricacies of it, but it's just interesting the interactions between those two groups. Let's go on to the third group. Okay, so we understand supporter. Analyst. What are analysts? What are their likes? What are their likes? Everybody knows what analysts like. Analysts love data, information. They love to be logical. They love analysis. They love objectives. They love, you know, black and white. For an analyst, the world is like black and white. I mean, everything is black and white. They want everything to be perfect. They love details. They love, you know, timeliness. You know, all of that is important to them. Outlines, information, that's their thing. What are their dislikes? Look at the opposite of it. They hate disorganization, poor planning. They hate anything that's not fully thought out. I mean, you can't hand them an anecdotal study and expect them to appreciate it. They'll go, well, where's the double-blind, triple-blind, blah, 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 blah. I mean, they tend to want more sophisticated data. And that they always are going after, like, the best data they can achieve, the best results they can do. Okay, what are their attributes? They're terrific if you're looking for somebody to do what? To be organized or systematic or exact. If you wanted to plan an event, you would want your analytical to be in charge of the budget. You know, they're going to get all the details. They're going to make the 17 phone calls necessary. They're going to do all the research. When an analytical goes out there to buy a house, they go on the internet and they look at all the houses in the market and they look at every single size and what per square foot, and they look at what attributes, what they don't have, what they do have. They'll spend 3 months analyzing what car to buy based on quality, safety, all the issues, and then price. And they'll analyze. So that's the analytical attributes. What are their weaknesses? The same thing. Are you guys getting this? The analytical, you give them a project, and you better give them a deadline, because man, oh man, they'll be on it for the next 6 months, even if you wanted it in 6 days, because they're always, their need for data is insatiable, because they're so concerned about being right. They want to be perfect, and they want to be right, and they want their information to be accurate, so they're going to get stuck in that data routine. They get stuck in. The other things, other weaknesses, they tend to reject change. They don't like change. My husband hates change. In fact, he can't even learn to put his keys in a different place in the house, so we just forgot about even attempting that. You know, they tend to be more loners. They like to work alone, remember we talked about supporters are great team players. So they're more of a loner because they want their control over their final product. And another weakness for them is they have minimal concern for relationships. They don't really put a lot of energy around relationships. That doesn't mean they're a bad spouse. That you can have a wonderful relationship with an analytical, but you're not going to develop a relationship with that analytical very quickly. It's going to be something that takes a lot of time, because they're going to want to know everything about you, and whether it's going to work or not work, they'll analyze that relationship 100 different ways before they're going to make a commitment to be open and start sharing. But it doesn't make them incapable. It just means it's a little harder because they want more data. Okay? So that's your analytical. So that's your formal flow with. And now you talk about, formal flow with. Now let's talk about our informal dominant, which is the other opposite quadrant to analytical, which is our promoters. And what are our promoters like? Our promoters love what? Our promoters love fun. They love to be crazy. They love new adventure. The change is a word they thrive on. I mean, they just love to be outside the box, outlandish. They love recognition. They love to be on stage. They love, you know, big dollars, big spending. They like kind of flashy stuff. They tend to be flamboyant. Their dislikes. They typically hate rules and structure. They really dislike people who are, like, unproductive or say, I can't do it or no, because these are your dreamers. These are the people that live every day dreaming of something new to do and new to. They're very, very creative. So they don't like people who are stuck in the mud. Which is what we kind of look at. Analyticals can be sometimes called stuck in the mud type people, right? And these guys are freewheeling. They're out there all the time. Their attributes again is creativity. This is the life of your party. You want to invite these guys over because they'll just be like the life of the funny, the fun. They're creative. They tend to make tons of money. These people, if you looked at all four quadrants, they make the most money. They're great risk takers. They love to do that. They're very impulsive, so they don't, you know, they can make decisions quickly, and if it's wrong, so what? They'll change direction on a dime. So they have no problem with that. They're enthusiastic, energetic. Those are attributes. What are some of their negatives? Again, the positives can also be negative. They tend not to build substantial relationships with people. They tend to stay more at a shallow level with people because they don't have the time to put the energy behind all the stuff it takes to build relationships. They tend to be a little bit overbearing because they love to hear who talk. They love to hear themselves talk. So they tend to talk very fast, and there are rapid changes. So people that want a little more substance, like the analyticals, are going to be very taken aback by their behavior. They're not typically good listeners because they're too busy listening to themselves. They love their own ideas, and they love just being on the go, constantly on the go. So tying them down, probably one of their greatest weaknesses is follow-up and follow-through. I mean, these guys are the ones that are going to come up with the greatest ideas for parties, and then they're going to delegate to the supporters to do all the work and the analytical to do the money planning and the budgeting and the controller to be in charge of everybody getting their stuff done. And then when the party happens, guess who's not showing up? The promoter, because why? Something else came up that was better by the time the party. That's your classic promoter type person, okay? All right, so now you've got the four quadrants kind of analyzed, and that's very, again, don't feel like you have to fit into every of those aspects or attributes or like as or dislikes. We all have pieces, again, of each of the quadrants, but hopefully you found one that, you know, that it, you know, really is resounding to you. Anyone want to share? Did you find yourself comfortable in the quadrant you were first assigned yourself to, or did you move quadrants? Anyone want to share on that?
Mary Jo, this is Rudy.
Hey, Rudy.
Yeah, I'm much like your husband, analytical. I've got toilet papers and towels. And I'm single, but everybody hates me for that. But anyway, I'm definitely analytical, but I can see what you're talking about. I do have the little other items.
Pieces of other quadrants in it. Yeah, great. But you definitely see that you're, and if you said the Rudy of analytical, what would you say? Maybe you're 60% analytical or 70% somewhere in that, a high percentage of that.
Yeah, exactly right. And then I have some of the other traits, mm-hmm. So you're exactly right.
Great. Good, good, good. So this is valuable to you. Great, great, great. Yeah. Anyone else want to share?
Hey, Joel?
Uh-huh.
I originally, when I took this test, came up with that I was a formal controller, which meant I was a controller. But when I actually sat in that group for that particular training,
uh-huh.
Man, the testosterone of that group was incredible. Unreal.
So it was,
and I'm going,
it was very male-dominated, too, wasn't it?
It was very male-dominated. And I'm like, well, I don't think I'm that much of a controller that I belong in this group. So then I kind of reevaluated because of the two questions that were asked of us and came up with that I was more analytical than I was
mm-hmm.
a controller.
But
it was very interesting because I had a team meeting last night, and even though I felt that I have been a controller, all of a sudden I'm like, come on, come on, come on, we need to make these decisions. We can't fool around. And I thought, oh, man, I guess I do have some control.
Some of that controller stuff, right, time efficiency concept, that results-oriented. See, where an analytical typically wouldn't respond like that, an analytical wouldn't be so anxious to get the results. An analytical would be more looking at, okay, what do we have in terms of data? Do we think we have enough? Does anyone have any? Here, maybe there's another way that we can look at this. We can collect more data over here. So they're not as anxious with the result as a controller is. A controller is the one that puts all the pressure on the analytical to, come on, get it done. I want it done tomorrow. I don't care that you don't have every bit of data you possibly could collect because you're never going to. So you see the difference, those two quadrants? They're both very results-oriented, but one has to be perfect. And the other one is more the result. It's not the process. Analytical are into the process. They want to make sure everything's perfect. They got all the data, all the information, all the yeah. But you can have a mixture of both. You're just finding that you have some of both, right?
Yep. Thanks.
Good. Good. Okay. Anyone else want to share? Or we move on. Okay. Let's move on then. So now we have a good flavor that you guys got to mix, and you can feel yourself, you know, in and out of different ones of these quadrants. And you can use the chart that Lydia sent out last week too to just get some more shortcomings, characteristics. It really helps you, again, you know, look at what the differences are between the four. And what I'd like to do now is, how do you recognize them? Because I think it's really important for you when you're working with people, and it's not an easy thing necessarily to do, especially when you have so many people that are blended in, you know, have traits in different quadrants. But again, most people have a dominant side. They have some dominant characteristic. They're either going to be majority supporter, analytical controller, promoter, and that's for you to find out. How do I know when I meet somebody, Mary Jo? How do I know when I'm talking to somebody, when I either in the airplane or, you know, at a meeting, or I go up to somebody, you know, somewhere? Let's talk about what it looks like. So maybe you can be more, and it doesn't mean that you're going to go out there and categorize somebody right off the bat. It's just that you're going to have some more information about them that they didn't give you. You can distinguish it just by how they behave. You can start seeing things about them because you understand their quadrant when you see how they behave. So you can be more informed on how to approach them and how to work with them. That's the purpose of this process. So if I walk up to somebody and they wear a suit, they're very well dressed, their hair is perfect, they're not, to a T, there's not a hair out of place, right away you should first say to yourself, wow, this person looks formal, right? So you almost right away can establish that they're probably either analyst or controller because of the way they dress. They're just, everything has to be perfect. They probably get their hair cut once a week. I get mine cut whenever Lydia yells at me to go get it cut, you know? Otherwise, I wouldn't even do that. You know, I'm just trying to, again, distinguish. But the control, so if somebody is like, you know, then right away you probably have them, they're probably in one of those two quadrants. Now, that doesn't mean they're for sure, but it's just a sign. So basically, even just looking at what they look like, how they take care of themselves can indicate to you, are they in the top half or bottom half of the quadrant? So that would either put them. And then the people that are controllers are going to be very dominant. They're going to be very much in control. They're going to be very outspoken, very decisive. They're going to be, you know, bottom line oriented. If you start talking about Manatech, they'll ask you, like, say, well, what is in it for me? You know, they're going to start asking, like, results oriented. What does it mean? What do I need to be doing? What is the structure? Do I get to be in control? Do I get to choose my methods? See how they're going to ask those kind of questions? Do I get to choose the way I do my business, or do I have to do this ready, set, go program? They're going to ask those kind of questions. That's how the controller is going to come across. They're going to want to know what is this all about, and how can I take control of this situation? How can I be in charge? Okay? So that's what, you know, and these people are not hard to distinguish because as you just heard, we heard that when you're in a group with them, she said that the comment that you made was that there is overabundance of testosterone. It doesn't mean they're typically male by any means because there are a lot of women that fit in the controller quadrant, but you know, that kind of dominance, her comment about the testosterone was just the flavor of the dominance that was there. You know, people very so sure of themselves and so, you know, just real strong decision makers. So you'll hear that in their voice, their exactness, their concept of liking to be in control, okay? And they can tend to be also restless. I mean, because they're so time conscious. They don't want to waste time. These people do not want to waste time. They just really time. So, again, does that help you guys, again, in distinguishing them? When you come across people like that, they usually come out pretty blatant in that category. You usually see those characteristics in the first couple of comments you make to them. So, and then we're going to talk later on how we work with them differently, but that's how to distinguish them. Supporters, you'll know very quickly, too. They're soft, gentle, loving, caring. They want to hug you. They're not dominant. They're very soft. They're not going to try to control a conversation. They're going to take stuff that they just took out of the dryer. They probably don't even own an iron. Because they don't care. It's part of just being one with the environment, they'll avoid conflict, and they're just sweet people. They're somebody you'd walk away from and, wow, is she ever sweet. She is so nice. She's so supportive. She's so conscious. You know, she's so conscious of my needs, and she really cares about me. That's, when you can make those comments about somebody you've met in 5 minutes, that's going to be a supporter quadrant for you. Analysts are going to be people that are totally organized. When you talk to them about Manatech, they're going to want to know, where's the data? They're going to want details. In other words, the controller's asking for the results, the bottom line. Well, how do I make this work? Show me the different mechanisms. How do I have control over it? The analytical says, hey, give me some more details. I need more numbers. I would like to look at some more studies. They love the comp plan. They'll look at the comp plan. They'll buy Mary Jo's DVD. They'll read the little booklet with the buckets in it, and then they'll probably go out and buy somebody else's DVD, and then they'll call you up, and then they'll do the cornerstone training on the comp plan, and then they'll get back to you and ask you four more questions, and then they'll say, where can I get more information? they typically won't rely on you to give them the answers. They will want to see the answers in writing somewhere else because they want to make sure what? That they're right. They know that maybe your interpretation isn't right, so they want to make sure that they are right. They want to be perfect in their analysis and their conclusions. And that's the kind of person they are. So that when you come across somebody like that, how are you going to recognize them? They're going to want more and more information. They're going to constantly be assessing and asking for information and details and data. And you're going to know, whoa, I got myself an analyst here. And then the promoter one is going to be the one that you're going to walk up to, and they're going to probably have the loudest clothes on that you've ever seen. They love to wear. Whenever you see somebody with loud clothes, you almost guarantee, because promoters are into look at me. They want recognition. They like to be acknowledged. They could care less what people think about them because they are them. They just, you know, they're out there flamboyant, dynamic. They're very informal, like your supporter was. Remember we talked about our supporter not owning an iron? Promoter doesn't either. But their clothes may not be as wrinkled because you know what they do? They go out and buy new clothes if their clothes get wrinkled. They're just a little bit more crazy. They make a ton of money. I forgot to tell you this. One of their weaknesses is they're the biggest losers of money, too. They make the most money of all the quadrants, but they also lose the most money because they don't what? They don't tie in with an analyst to help them analyze business opportunities. So they end up making quick decisions with their money, and a lot of them aren't necessarily good. But these people are. Big enthusiasm, big energy. If you want to see a promoter, typically if you walk in a room of people, you're going to see a bunch of people gathering around one person. They're all laughing. There's your promoter. It's going to be the class clown, the comedian. It's going to be the person and that's not just, you know, these people can be very serious and very, I mean, these people are high-powered people in many, many instances. Very serious, very, you know, very, very, very successful. But they also are the center of attention. That's it. So you can find that. And tend to be showy. So those are the four quadrants. So not hard to distinguish them, but again, if people have mixes, sometimes you can, you know, you'll see a mix. You'll see that not all of their characteristics fall in, but don't get off track in terms of where their greatest percentage probably lies. How do you work with them? Let's go over this quickly. If you work with a controller, let's say a controller comes along. When a controller is in your life, you want to be extremely precise. You cannot be long-winded. They're not going to listen to you long enough because, remember, they're so much into time efficiency. So you want to be very precise. You want to get to the bottom line with them, recognize them for their ideas, always be on time, very well organized, you know. So when you and always in a professional light. Don't get lackadaisical and lazy and sloppy with things. They're very professional. What do you talk to them about with Manatech? You talk about owning their own business. They're in control. They can create whatever marketing plan they'd like. Here's a bunch they can look at. They can develop their own. You know, they'll create. Their results are totally dependent on what they do with the business themselves because everybody's their own. You run your own business, right? You want to challenge them. That doesn't mean challenge who they are, but if they're given a challenge, these are the people that said, well, I'm not sure you know, a lot of people can't get the national director in the first 60 days. Oh, my gosh, you have a new national director in 45 days. Controllers love challenges. They love to be challenged. So, you know, but you would never say to them, I don't think you can make it, you know. But you could just say, you know, this is a system that we use, but a lot of people never get to national because they just aren't conscientious with their time. And they go, they know already. When you say that to them, they know they're going to get there because they are the most conscientious with their time of anyone. So that's the kind of language you would use with them. To acknowledge them for their you don't have to tell them they're conscientious. You just say, you know, if you're really conscientious with your time, it's easy to get to national director in 3 months or 2 months or whatever. And watch what they say. They'll now want to beat it because now they're challenged. Okay, supporters. How do I work with a supporter in Manatech? How do I work with, well, first of all, with a supporter, you want to just work on building a relationship with them in friendship. You don't open it up to risk. You talk about family. You get very interested in their person. You want to know about them. You really care about them. This is really the quadrant of caring, you know, putting your heart out. And then they're going to want to know about you. These are people that rather talk about you because sometimes they don't even feel comfortable talking about themselves because they don't like to be at the center of attention. They just like to support other people. So open yourself up to being supported by them, and they'll love you forever. You know, appreciate them. They're the ones that if they send you flowers because somebody in your family gets sick, you send them an acknowledgement note immediately. You want to continue to acknowledge them and just recognize them and the contribution they make to your life, because that's what their life is about. They're about contributing. They're about supporting. When you talk to them about Manatech, you want to talk about Mana Relief, our mission work. You use mission language. They love to be part of mission. You know, they don't care so much about getting to Platinum Presidential, you know, whereas the controller, he can't wait to make it to Platinum. You know, supporters aren't going, you know, they it's not that they don't want to be presidential. It's just not, it's not a priority in their life. A priority is who are they helping today? They love to work in teams, so you use language around team effort. Oh, we always work in teams, and everybody gets to do what they do best. And so you talk about that. They love teamwork. They love, again, they're loyal. They're prudent. They're, you know, all about relationships, and they're very dependable. So allow them to be dependable with you. Give them assignments to do if they that they want to do, and they love the recognition of being dependable. It's part of who they are. So support them in doing that. And they love, in terms of Manatech, when you talk about Manatech, you talk about, you know what this business is? It really is a gigantic customer service business. Because where do we find the majority of supporters? If you walk in a corporate environment, you're going to find them in the customer service division of that company. They just love supporting. So, and supporters are so critical in our business, because if you don't get into customer service and you don't support the people you sign up, they're not going to be with you very long. So you need a heart for that, and these are supporters are there. Okay, so that's how you work with supporters. And when you're working with supporter, you know, even in a, if you're looking for successful business builders, you want to work with a supporter to make them feel good about themselves and make them feel that they're contributing into you, because that's what they want to be doing, is pouring into you, and how they can help the mission and help Mana Relief and help save lives and impact others all over the world. And that's what we're about. The analyst, our third quadrant, you want to be, when you're working with an analyst, you want to be organized, exacting. You want to be correct to a T. You don't want to say one thing wrong. You don't want to say the average executive director makes, you know, $50,000 a year. The minute that, because you know why? The analyst is going to be the first guy to go on Manatech On Demand documents, even though he's never been on the website, and he's going to research and search out and find out what the average income is of executives. And if you're 10 cents off, you have just lost your credibility. And if you lose your credibility with the analyst, you've lost everything. Because remember, they're the guys that want to be perfect. They want perfect data. So when you start hyping things up, if you use hype, if you exaggerate, even by 2 cents, wrong. You know, an analyst buying a house, if you go and try to sell a house to an analyst, you say, well, this house has, you know, this house has 2,500 square feet. If he looks at the sheet and he finds out it's only 2,420, he's going to be irritated. He thinks you lied to him. Why would you tell him 2,500 when it was 2,420? Why did you make a lie? Why did you make it up that it had 80 more square feet than what it does have? You know, you get this? Whereas we as promoters, the promoter quadrant, could care less about 80 square feet. We just care if it looks good. We just like it if it's roomy and it's open and we think we can have parties there or have a lot of people over. Hey, that'll work. Yeah, sign me up. Let me buy it. We don't even know what the price is. The analyst is like, he's so into detail. So you guys gotta know this about these people, and they're gonna you have to be patient with this person, because they're gonna want more and more data, information, exacting. They want it. You could introduce them to another analyst. That's a great way. They like that. But remember, this is a guy who likes to work well on his own. He's not big in relying on everybody else, because he likes to be right. He wants the comp plan details. He likes the structure and the science. He loves. Analyticals typically love glycoscience.org. It's got a lot of data on it, and they can go research there, you know. And, you know, so you want to, you know, you want to keep it real clean, crisp, cut, and be very patient, very patient. He's a problem solver, and he takes time, so be patient. And then finally, the promoter group, what do we do with those guys? Jeez, just have fun. Give them center stage. Let them be the top dog. Name, they love to name drop. They love to hear about other people involved. They love to, they're entertaining. You want to stay on a faster pace with them. You know, you don't want to be slow and methodical. You'll drive them crazy. They like to make decisions quickly. They probably don't even care about what the comp plan says. As long as you tell them they can make a ton of money and residual income and, you know, build the dream house in their life that they've always wanted. You know, they're big on goals. They love to dream. So you talk about dreams with them and discuss their future and what they're going to create through Manatech. So you tend to be a little bit more fun and carefree. You deal with them on an emotional level about just happiness and fun. They want to be around happy people and fun people. They don't want to be around analytical people. That turns off the the promoter quadrant. They see them as necessary, but that's not who they, if they're going to throw a party, they're not going to invite all their analyst friends over. They're going to invite what? Their promoters and their supporters, they're going to invite them over because they want somebody to serve the food. And the supporter, they, when they call up their supporter friends, they go, would you come over and make a cake for my party? And the supporter is saying inside, no, I really don't want to. But you know what comes out of their mouth? Okay. Okay. Because the supporter is just so desperate, really would like to be at the party. And maybe just to watch the people and just be overwhelmed by what goes on at the party. Whereas, you know, the promoters can look for other promoters. Just they want to have a lot of fun. They want to be on stage. But they don't like a lot of competition, so there can't be too many competing for that front row seat. So anyway, so what do we talk about? We talk about national conventions, recognition. We talk about incentives with promoters. They love to talk about all the free trips. Free is a big word. They love to get things for free. But and they also are big into recognition. So you talk to them about leadership levels. These guys are really, promoters really want to hear about how to get to regional, national, executive, presidential, and how fast it takes, and because that's all recognition. That's about recognition, and they're big into recognition, where the supporter could care less about that stuff. It's not that they don't want to get there, it's just that it doesn't. It's not a priority. For promoters, it's a big priority because it's all about being on stage. It's all about getting that recognition. Okay, and then how do I use this in my downline? Let me just close with this so you can get some idea. These quadrants are critically important in building your downline. Why? Because I'll give you a perfect example is promoters. You're going to find a lot of promoters who like network marketing because it's all about people, and they love people business, and there's big, you know, pots of gold at the end of the rainbow. So it attracts promoters to it. The problem with promoters, as I told you earlier, one of the big problems with typical promoters is that they don't build substantial relationships with people. They tend to do what? Be more shallow because they hit and miss. They'll sign you up and then you might not hear from them for a month because they're on to signing up 10 more people at the next party they throw. So they tend to just be driven and just driven by, you know, the recognition they're going to get by achieving a certain goal. And they sometimes leave people behind in their lives. So when you have a promoter in your business and you see this promoter is signing up 18, 20 people a month, you better sit down and talk about where he's placing these people and then have some team meetings and get some supporters in his downline to say, you know what, even if you don't sign people up, if I put people underneath you, will you do the four-step consumer follow-up program with them? Will you call them? Will you make sure they get to meetings? And supporters will look at you and that is just a blessing from manna from heaven. They would love to have somebody else sign everybody up underneath them and then just purely be able to support them. That's their dream come true. So that's what you want to do because, you see, if you take that promoter and he puts all his people other places, no one's going to be there to support him, and then you lose your downline. So look and evaluate in placing people where you need to place people so that you can make sure that you're getting need supporters in their downline or it'll dry up because they value more so the new relationship than they do the old relationship, where a supporter will do everything they can to support a relationship, make sure it doesn't, you know, fall off the wayside. So, and then I just put in here, too, that, you know, when you look at other quadrants, of course, so every promoter needs great supporters underneath them, so and they need to start placing their people under those supporters so that they get support, otherwise they'll dry up. Every analyst needs great promoters because analysts don't tend to be real outward people. They have a hard time approaching people. They get to be a little bit overwhelmed with data, information, materials. They can't talk about, you know, it's so cute. I had Ann on the phone earlier who talked about Minnesota, and she couldn't talk about Minnesota. I said, well, tell us about Sam out in the field. Notice how what I was looking for was the emotional side of Sam, you know, being motivational and incredible. He just got us all going. We all felt great. He just did such a great job of just, you know, doing an overview of what's going on in Manatech and just taking us all forward in an incredible way to know that we're in the right company in the right time. See, when I asked Ann to talk about that, and it's just cute, she's on the phone, and she knows what quadrant she's in. Ann can't talk about Sam without what? Ann had to get into details. She had to immediately get into specific details about what he talked about because she's an analyst. And that's what analysts are about. They have to get into all those specific details. So you may not want those details, but you're going to get them when you ask an analyst to speak because that's the language they speak. They can't keep the big picture in mind, because it's not about the big picture, it's about the little, the specific details, the specific things and specific stuff, that's what comes out. Okay? So analysts need promoters in their organization. that are going to bring people on because they need that kind of support. Analysts will try to quash promoters because what they do is they see the promoters a little wild and woolly and they don't, you know, always follow the rules or they don't follow, they're not doing it right or they're, you know, and they try to instruct them what to do and what not to do. That can put water on a very hot promoter. So you got to be careful of that. But you want to get some analysts and promoters, otherwise the analyst business aren't going to grow by themselves. They need to find promoters. And we all need to find promoters because those are the fastest growing people typically in Manitech are promoter types. They're the ones that, because they don't care, they'll talk to anybody. That's the person that can, I can walk into the post office and talk to anybody there anytime. It's just easy as pie. Because they don't, remember this is a group that doesn't care what other people think about them. They're just out there being wild and crazy. But they also put off people because their personality can be overbearing and they're very in control talking wise and what they do. So supporters need promoters, but promoters need supporters much more. And controllers also need the supporter quadrant, I mean the promoter quadrant, but they also need, we all need all quadrants. It's just a concept of understanding where some of your leaders are, what quadrant they're coming from, and then how do I help best structure their downline to help them put, you know, supporters under their promoters to help make sure where you have great retention, because retention is so critical. Okay, so that's it. Let me take everybody off mute or anyone. Oh, no, I don't do that anymore. Anyone want to, you know, make some comments, any questions at the end of the call? If you want to get off of mute and say anything, we'll open up. I know we're a little bit over. Was it helpful for you guys? Does it help you guys? Yeah.
I have a question regarding the, you know, pinning down ourselves as to what we're in. Because when you asked about the dominant or free flow, and you talked about do you, when you're with your family, do you make the decisions? Do you go along with what's made? I find that in my family, I would be dominant, but when you take it out of the family into the rest of the world, then I would be free flow. So
I would suggest that your flow, then stick to flow with for you because. What you're telling me is that you need an incredibly secure comfort area to exert any kind of dominance. Do you get that?
Absolutely, it makes
sense. That's exactly what you say, Mary Jo, in my very safe home, I'm very dominant, but it's very, very safe. The minute I step outside, boy, I'm flow with. I'm not going to exert myself. I'm not going to take control in a meeting. I'm not going to stand up and say, that's wrong, let's do it this, because it's just not your nature. You are definitely flow with. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's classic for, there are a lot of people that are flow with, but they can be dominant. But it's when I ask them, in what situations do you find yourself dominant, they tell me about very safe situations, okay? Very, you know, it's a known zone form. It's, I know everything that can happen. I'm totally protected, and nothing bad can happen in my environment. So that's what allows me to have more dominance, okay?
That's very good. Thank you. And it must mean that's something to build on and work
on. Yeah, start asking yourself, why is it that I can't exert myself outside? Why do I need safe? What's this about me needing to be safe? Yeah, great. Yeah, do some journaling on that and tell me more. I'll help you through that because that's great.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Mary Jo, I assume there was one this morning, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't get one, but I've been on the call and it's all been very helpful. Is there... Is this a rich man, poor man, or rich man's business guide or whatever is? Where's a book that has this?
Oh, there's billions of them, Gwen. There's just so many of the analysis of a personality quadrants there. If you just looked up on the internet and looked at personality quadrant analysis, I didn't take this out of a book. This is really out of trainings that I've been at and self-development seminars and some other.
And who was the one that you mentioned that right at the beginning of the conference call? That was what training?
Oh, Brian Klemmer's training. He does this.
Okay.
He does this, and he uses these terms: controller, analytical, dominance. Controller, analytical, promoter, supporter.
And is that the same one as the Myers-Briggs with the
yep.
otter and the beaver and
the otter and the lion and the golden retriever? You bet.
And the beaver.
You bet.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And if you guys want, there's a great Carol Merlo put together an article that took all the different quadrant analysis people in the industry that have done these four quadrant analysis. And she took them and she put columns of, you know, if you're green, then you're the otter, then you're the supporter. You get it? She wrote it all down. So I can send that out. Would you guys like to have that?
I would.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
I'll send it out.
Yeah.
She did a nice job
of
that in one of her newsletters. Yeah. Great. Because a lot of you have done other personality quadrant analysis. you said, well, Mary Jo, when I did this one, I was orange. And I go, okay, what is orange? Just give me some of your traits, and I can tell you what quadrant you fit in here. But I don't know the language behind all the different, you know, the diamonds, the rubies, and that kind of stuff, and the orange and the green. And, you know, they're just, everybody did it a little differently. Mm-hmm. Any other questions or comments?
Yeah, this is Rudy again, the analyst. You had me laughing so hard, now you ruined my psyche, and now I have to replay this so I can write down my notes.
That's great. Good, Rudy. I'm glad to hear you enjoyed it. That's super. Yeah. That's great. That's great.
Mary Jo, this is recorded, so we can play it again, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's recorded, and it'll be posted on ManaTrain. As soon as we get our website, we had a problem with the web server. In fact, we're going to actually change web servers, we think, because we had so many problems with them, but we'll let you know. But we're going to, as soon as the ManaTrain website's back up, it'll be posted there. Absolutely, yeah. And it's a great training for you guys to do with people in your organization. You know, just have a team meeting and do a quadrant analysis, and you can, and what's really fun about it, if you get a group of 10, 20 people together, is to divide the room up into four squares and play with it, have fun with it. And here's this is the fun thing to do, is to have the groups decide, give them the four questions. What are your likes? What are your dislikes? What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? Ask them those four questions and let them give you the answers as a group. They'll work together as a team in their little, you know, quadrant, and watch what happens when they give you the responses. It will knock your socks off. Because they always come up exactly the same. It's just incredible. It is really absolutely incredible. I mean, you know, you'll see different things like the promoters. Sometimes they say with their likes, they'll throw out the word sex because they just think about sex. You know, it's not that anyone else doesn't like sex in all the other quadrants. It's just the promoters, it's just who they are. You know, they like to be kind of out there. But, you know, it's just they'll come up with, and that's why I know when you ask the controllers what their weaknesses are, they're going to look at you like, oh, what, are you crazy? We have weaknesses, you know? Because I've done it, people, many, many, many times, and it always, always plays out. I mean, it's just really something else. We are who we are. Isn't that fun? Okay, anyone else? Any other comments? Okay, well, I love you guys, and I hope this really helped you a lot, and then